This is City Lights. I'm Lois Reitzes. Great to be with you. My guest today is Emily Giffen. She is a very popular author with 7 novels that made the New York Times bestselling list. Her new book, set entirely in Atlanta, is First Comes Love. Emily, welcome to City Lights.
Thank you, Lois. It's so good to be here.
Great to have you. So the story is about different types of love, romantic love, friendship, and perhaps above all, sibling love, with all the complexities involved. Introduce us to the Garland family.
Well, let's see. The Garland family, the story features Meredith and Josie Garland. Really, it's about them, their journey as sisters. But 15 years prior to the start of the story, they lose their brother Daniel in a car accident, and the story is about their coming to terms with what happened 15 years before, facing that benchmark and really taking a look at their lives. And I think sometimes those anniversaries give us the opportunity to think about where we are in our lives and where we're going.
You know, as I was reading your book, I was struck by the fact that the story's set in 2001, post 9/11, and though not related to that tragedy, and coincidentally, this is the second novel in as many weeks that I've read in which a crucial event occurs in 2001. And I wonder, just as many European historians think, the 20th century did not really begin till 1914 or even 1918, you know, World War One.
Sure.
That perhaps the 9/11 terrorist attacks situated us in the 21st century, a different century, so radically different from any others. Did the symbolism, do you think that's part of what's appealing to authors now? Is there somehow, I mean, you could have made this book set on the 5-year anniversary of his death or the 10-year anniversary of his death.
Sure, sure. Well, the book is actually set in 2016 or whenever the book came out. Right, but they were looking back at the 15-year anniversary. I do think that that's a date that we think of in our minds. And as I was writing flashbacks, I have a firm grasp of exactly what was going on in my life, culturally speaking. And of course, that ultimately becomes the framework. So I think there is something to that, and maybe the same way that people felt. I wasn't alive then, but you know, when I talked to my mother and her contemporaries about Kennedy assassination, you sort of know where you were then and everything that was going on in your life before and after. So I think probably that did come into play. Interestingly, when I was you know, laying out the chronology for the book. And I also I think there was the component of I wanted there to be enough time to have gone by for there to really be perspective and the opportunity to think to themselves, we really should be farther along in our handling of grief. I mean, grief is a tricky thing. You know, we all have our different timetables and it can do, you know, some people are really inspired by it and some aren't. And I thought if it was fewer than 15 years, it might not be enough time to have that perspective. And if it were longer than that, the reader might have the sense of, or I as the writer, which is ultimately the same thing, might have the sense of these people really should have, you know, dealt with their grief and their lives a little sooner than, say, 20 years.
Okay.
But there is something to those round number benchmarks,
yeah,
whether it's a birthday or a high school reunion or the anniversary of something significant, whether good or bad.
That's how we seem to create these observances. Each chapter is told from the point of view of each sister, Josie and Meredith. Do you have a sister?
I do, Lois. How could you tell? Interestingly, I do. I have one sister, and she's 1 year older, and we did not lose a sibling, so it's only ever been the two of us, and we have a very close relationship, very supportive. And but it's intense, and that we are capable of misunderstanding each other in fundamental ways that are surprising, given that we share the same frame of reference, the same family, the same upbringing. Yet we really sometimes don't see eye to eye. And what strikes me, the similarity really between Josie and Meredith and Sarah and I, is this sense of just fundamental misunderstanding, like even though you should know someone so well. So I drew on that for sure as I wrote First Comes Love. And it's really the first time that I've explored the sister relationship. As you mentioned in your intro, I write so much about relationships and love and romantic love and all sorts of friendships, but it's the first time in 8 novels that I've really dug into the sister relationship. And I think maybe in part that was because I worried that I wouldn't be able to separate myself from Sarah in our story. But that quickly, within the first couple of chapters, when the characters start to feel real, in the beginning, you're just kind of their types and you're controlling everything. And then
you as the writer,
but then you get to know them. And interestingly, your question reminds me of my mother reacting when she read an early chapter, and she said, aren't you worried that Sarah is going to, be upset by it? I'm like, well, what are you reading when you read this? She's a librarian. She reads 3 or 4 books a week, and she's, reads as I write. And I said, what are you seeing here? And she said, well, I don't know. Neither of you is either one yet, but so it's that paranoia, right? I'm like, I could separate myself from Sarah in this.
Or, your mother as a librarian may have more literary cred than I.
No,
but
I doubt that,
sometimes,
Lois.
Just as an innocent book lover, trying to get inside the author's head. You're creating characters. You're not writing your autobiography.
Sure, or a family memoir.
But
and ultimately, there's parts of you that are, in every
of
book.
Course.
I'm sure authors all always tell you that. But
with any art,
yes,
form.
Any form, any, exactly any.
We have to draw from our own experiences. But Josie's a first grade teacher, and she seems very proud of her work. Her sister Meredith thinks Josie uses children to hide her emotions, or maybe she's just, this stunted child herself. And Meredith is described as a parent pleaser. She's not very likable.
No, she's not.
What's it like to knowingly write an unlikable character?
I've been doing it for so long. It's sort of one of my trademarks. I think that really pulling back, I think that they are good people at heart, as I think most of us are. And they're just in unlikable situations. And so I think really the frustration I had with Meredith as I created her and wrote her story was that I had the feeling that she should have been happier than she was. And I think that's sort of this concept of gratitude, these gratitude journals and hashtag blessed. And
yes,
you touch
upon that.
Right. But, Meredith on paper should have been so happy. And I think there's this sense of, can't you just get it together? Can't you be happy? Can't you be grateful? And as I wrote her story and got to know her as a character, I understood that she was doing a lot of things and making a lot of choices for other people. And I think the frustration of that really gathered momentum as they approached that 15-year, anniversary and thinking about her life choices and why she had made them. So ultimately, I understood where she was coming from, and I found empathy for her. And I hope that most of my readers were able to find that empathy. Did you, Lois?
Ultimately, yes. I didn't like her at all. You know, I felt like, you know, I felt like Cher in Moonstruck. I wanted to
I love that
snap
movie.
Snap out of it. Oh, it's one
that's
of my favorites.
That's one of my favorites, too.
Oh, one of the all-time
And that's one of my mother's favorites.
Aha.
Yeah, that's it.
Great taste.
So, she wanted her to snap out of it. But, of course, if she had the ability to snap out of it, she wouldn't have much of a story or a challenge or an arc.
Not.
So, but there was times when she was just entirely too strident. But I think a lot of that was, you know, came out as a result of her feelings about her sister. Like, I don't think she was nearly as strident or difficult or unlikable when she was around her friend Ellen,
right?
For example. But Josie, in many ways, brought out the worst in her. And I think the same can be said of Josie. You know, I think Josie sort of comes, when she's around Meredith, is very irresponsible, and she comes across as self-centered and pursuing whatever she wants in the very much the opposite of Meredith's life plan. So
always about her.
Always about her in Meredith's eyes. But as we saw, it really, it wasn't as much as it would come across.
If you're just joining us, you're listening to City Lights on WABE, Atlanta's choice for NPR, talking with the author Emily Giffen. We'll be back after a short break.
Support for WABE comes from the Emory Aesthetic Center. You can feel confident from the inside out with Emory, offering cosmetic solutions for the face and body. Expertise, experience, and excellent results. That's the Emory difference. EmoryAesthetic.org. And from SCAD, presenting SCAD Style, an annual gathering of international design luminaries and influencers featuring lectures, panels, and workshops, April 6th through the 13th, online at scad.edu/scadstyle.
Back with author Emily Giffen. Her latest book is First Comes Love, and Atlanta looms so large in this book. On many pages, we see references to landmarks, restaurants, streets known to most residents of this metro area. But it's a very specific part of Atlanta that the story depicts. Well-to-do Buckhead life, which is more than a neighborhood. Would you explain Josie's line about 2 degrees of Buckhead separation?
Oh, I forgot about that. The interesting thing about a paperback launch is, you know, the book came out a year ago, so I'm writing the next one, and so you're reminding me of some things I had forgotten. But you know, it's just a small world. I think the same can be said of really any neighborhood. But Josie, I think, very much feels a sense of claustrophobia at times and judgment. They both do in different ways, and so I think that's when she made that reference. But it's a small town and enclave, as we know here in Atlanta. And I think it worked for this story very well because of some of those tendencies. I mean, it can happen anywhere in a small town in a big city, but for some of those tendencies to feel that life should look and be a certain way, I think they're, having lived in many places, including, you know, London and New York City, I think there is sometimes that element to Buckhead. I mean, it's beautiful, and it offers so much, but there is a little bit of, you know, there's a homogenous feel sometimes.
Oh, absolutely. Now,
to tread lightly.
The Blue Ridge Grill, the OK Cafe, the Iberian Pig, Krog Street Market, Center for Puppetry Arts, Chastain Park. Do you have Atlantans in mind as part of your readership?
Well, sure. This is actually, you know, I'm from Chicago. I consider Chicago my hometown, but this is the longest I've lived anywhere. And I love it here. I love the people, the vibrancy, the diversity, just from neighborhood to neighborhood. And so I think it worked really well with any work of fiction. There's a broad cast of characters you can draw from.
Indeed. And sense of place is a good part of any novel, of any writing, I think. One line that I especially like actually pertains to New York in here when Meredith is on her way into Manhattan in a taxi from LaGuardia. She inhales the glorious scent of Queens, a mix of exhaust and garbage and falafels, which I
sounds often, wonderful, doesn't it?
When
hungry.
We go to New York, which is my favorite island getaway, as I describe it.
Oh, I love that. My
husband just laughs hysterically every time I say to breathe this air, which, you know, has a lot of garbage and so.
There's something that's just.
It's the
unique about
the
that
electricity.
Stench, scent, whatever you want to call it.
Yeah, it just evokes the whole place. Well, in the 2 minutes we have left, I wanted to ask you, because ultimately the book involves love and forgiveness.
Sure.
Which you write are one and the same, and all your books involve love as a theme, mm-hmm. because they're from a female point of view. Your novels have been characterized as chick lit. Thrillers, adventure stories, westerns aren't defined by gender. Is that category demeaning or just misogynist?
You know, I choose to see it as just as a marketing description. I write about real characters, real people who are at a point in their lives and they're dealing with their, you know, relationships and emotions. And I think you can call it whatever you want to call it. I mean, I think Woody Allen would be chick lit if that were, not literature, of course, but a chick flick. He does relationships well. And, you know, I strive to do that. And I just hope that readers who will connect with my characters pick up the books, and I don't get as concerned with those labels.
Emily Given is the author of 7 New York Times bestselling novels. Her latest paperback release is First Comes Love. Emily Given will be at the Atlanta History Center tonight, a reception at 6:30. The program begins at 7:30. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Lois. Come out and join me for a glass of wine tonight at the Atlanta History Center.